It's 3:01 in the fast lane. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers. An officially licensed Rolex jeweler, BT, Ronj, and Randy, Jeff Passan on the Kevin Wheeler Show this morning here on 101 ESPN. ESPN's Jeff Passan, who is in awe of Yadier Molina. And I think, guys, tell me if you're reading it this way. Essentially, is trolling Cardinal fans who say he's stupid if he says he's not a Hall of Famer.
I don't think he's trolling at all. I think that fans can get very aggressive if you question anything. We all know this, and we've had the good fortune of watching Yadier Molina over the years, his entire career, how great he is, how special he is, what he means to the organization. And I think that most people listening probably believe he's a Hall of Famer at some point, but others will probably go right at you if you say anything that leads to the contrary off the bat. Cardinal fans can attack, and I like that. You know, Cardinal fans have a little battle hawk in them, is what they have.
Oh, yeah. You got to have some battle hawk in you.
Now, Passan mentioned a conversation he had on Twitter, first mistake, with a Cardinals fan. Second mistake, who claimed that Passan was short-sighted for only evaluating the offense. According to, and I agree with that 100%, but according to Passan, the fan said that people who actually know baseball know that Yadi's defense makes him a shoe-in.
By all means, quantify his defense for me, and not by awards. Explain to me how exactly his defense makes up for his substandard offensive game, compared to other Hall of Fame catchers. And what other examples of first ballot Hall of Famers? Ozzie Smith accepted because he is an outlier at a position whose defense is far more quantifiable, got in on the strength of their defense alone. This is the funny part to me. Cardinals fans think the burden of proof is on me to prove why he isn't a Hall of Famer, when all they do is rely on their belief that he is as this incontrovertible thing. I'm sorry, but 9 gold gloves or he's the best game caller isn't a sufficient argument. I'm very open to the idea that there is one. Let's see you make it.
And my recommendation to Jeff Passan would be, rather than ask the fans to prove it, because you have the access to other players, go around baseball and talk to people that Yadier Molina has competed with and against, and ask them what separates him and why they, because almost universally they do believe that he's a Hall of Famer, why they think that he would be a worthy Hall of Famer.
I don't think that players, overall, like, it's the be-all, end-all, like, what players think. I believe that there's value in opinions across the board, but I do wholeheartedly believe that that should be part of a conversation when you're looking at it. It's like, oh, dude, you play against him all the time. What do you think? What do you think about this guy? And the tough part is, when you are digging into stuff, because look, Jeff Passan has all the stats that we have. Like, we can all look at the same stuff. But the stuff that you miss oftentimes, and we do have metrics for this type of stuff now. Pitch framing. Yadi to me is one of the best that I've ever seen do that. The bottom of the strike zone strike that I watch other catchers, other organizations, I watch it when Yadi's not in the game, pitches that aren't caught by Kisner and aren't caught by Weeders that aren't strikes, that just drags him out of the zone, just kicks him. Yadi will break his thumb to catch a ball.
Do you know who was even better at that than he was?
Who?
His brother.
Yeah.
Jose is exceptional, was exceptional at doing that.
Yeah. No, yeah, but that's the thing that's a little bit harder to quantify. And when you're looking up defensive metrics, you can find it at certain places, but you don't find it everywhere. Yadi also essentially has shut down all running game. Like, so even if the caught stealing numbers or percentages, you don't just go like, oh, that's the best ever. The attempts are way down. Like, nobody runs on this dude.
Now, I think it is a fair conversation to have whether or not he's in, because I believe in the idea of nuance sometimes. And what tends to happen in a case like this, and really it's around baseball and many of the conversations we have, but it does seem like if you are on one side and you completely dismiss the other, so if you're analytical and you dismiss the subjective, or if you're somebody who relies more on subjective ideas and you dismiss the analytics completely without even considering what's happening on the other side, you're probably wrong for that. You have to assess everything. You have to take it all into account. But what's interesting about the argument he's making is that, I think he's conceding that people around baseball think very highly of Yadier Molina, because if you listen to the broadcast on ESPN the other night when this conversation first took place, when he was with Jason Benetti and Rick Sutcliffe, he did concede that. And so did the other guys on the broadcast. They all said the same thing. If you talk to people around baseball, people who have competed against him or have had to game plan for him, they all talk about how great he was in those aspects. And for that stuff that is immeasurable, I do think there's an argument for him being in the Hall of Fame. And I do believe he's going to get in.
Now, according to Passan, he's not sure if Yadi even stands out among other current catchers.
Trying to separate him from Buster Posey is a near impossible task. How can you tell me that Yadier Molina is better at calling games or better at controlling games than Buster Posey is? Buster Posey, if you talk with the pitchers who have thrown to him, if you talk with Bruce Bochy, if you talk with the players who have played with him, is considered almost as masterful as Yadier Molina in all of those other elements. Buster Posey has one more ring than Yadier Molina, and Buster Posey was a far, far, far greater offensive player than Yadier Molina ever could have dreamed of being.
Well, here's what I'll say about that. I don't think it's a zero-sum thing here. Does it have to be that it's one of them and not the other?
I think they're both Hall of Famers.
Absolutely.
And I did hear a very key word in there when he was talking about all the great things that Buster Posey does. I heard the word almost as good as Yadier Molina at a lot of those things. And, well, I mean, maybe it's just an adjective. It is what it is. But there's still a guy that is there. And I'm with you. Buster Posey's a Hall of Famer, in my opinion, too. Yadi will be there also. I'm not going to call you stupid if you don't think that he's a first-rounder. Although I did say on a pregame show once that if you don't think that Yadier Molina is a Hall of Famer, something to the effect that you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And then somebody, and it wasn't Jeff Passan, by the way, took offense to it and was mad. And then when we had him on the show, he said, is that the show with Brad Thompson on it that said I'm an idiot?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell. It was Keith Law.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter
who it
is, but it was Keith Law.
And we should note, by the way, that Tim Lincecum,
friend of the show, Keith Law.
Yeah, Tim Lincecum hated throwing to Posey.
Definitely.
And once they got together in 2010, that World Championship season, Lincecum only threw to Posey two times. And over the rest of Lincecum's career, he only threw to Posey 15 times. So you've got that guy who just couldn't, for whatever reason, get on the same page with Posey. And I guess you had Mike Leake here that really didn't want to get on the same page with anybody.
That happens. There's always going to be an outlier that, for whatever reason, they just don't want to throw to a particular guy. Or a catcher who's not really considered to be all that good, and they feel like that's got to be their personal catcher. I think that stuff happens. That's just human conflict, right?
Get you a friend like that, by the way. If you're that catcher that's not that great,
yes.
Link on to an ace who has to have you, and you can show up at every ball
just
club.
Just be Tim Wakefield's personal catcher.
That's right. They'll fly you in.
They'll fly you across the country.
With a helicopter.
Was it Charlie O'Brien that caught Maddux in Atlanta? I think it was. Javi Lopez caught everybody else, and I think Charlie O'Brien caught Maddux, which is a pretty good job to have, too. Now, Passan had another DM on Twitter. He spends way too much time on Twitter. That raised this question regarding the Yadi debate.
Can the story of this era of baseball be told without Yadier Molina? And I believe the answer is unequivocally yes. To me, Hall of Fame caliber production is about long periods of greatness, right? Were you one of the five best players in your league for an extended period of time? You know, Jay Jaffe does the Jaws system. Adjudicates Hall of Famers, and he uses seven-year peak. If you go and look at Yadier Molina's career, Kevin, how many years was he one of the 10 best players in the league?
Well, again, if you're going to judge it based on offense, none. Maybe one.
I'm not judging it based on offense. I want to judge it based on everything. Everything that we know, I'm not even going to hold it up to the quantifiable standard. Let's just hold it up to the, when was Yadier, if we're going on reputation here, because a lot of this, remember, is based on reputation. The basis, the thrust of this argument is that Yadier Molina's reputation among his peers is unparalleled in his ability to manage a game and to catch defensively, right? So that is the root of this argument. Let's extend that argument then to when was Yadier Molina seen When was the perception, which is so important here, when was he seen as one of the 10 best players in the league, let alone all of baseball?
I would say I would argue the stretch between 2010 and 2014, where he finished in the top five MVP twice.
Yeah, I think you're extending it too far out. I think maybe it starts in 2011, and it doesn't go any bit past 2014.
So Jeff Passan thinks that's part of the Hall of Fame discussion is, can you tell the story of baseball without player X being involved?
I do think that's part of it. And that's why I feel the way I do about some of the PED era guys. I feel that way about Barry Bonds is, can you tell the story of baseball without
Absolutely
having the
not.
Home run leader in it? I don't think you can. Can you tell
right.
it without Clemens? I don't think that you can. Apparently the Hall feels differently. And I totally understand if you feel differently too about guys that have cheated the game, because I hate that aspect of it as well. I think that's part of it. But again, it's just another way of looking at it. I love being able to look at somebody's baseball reference page and seeing bold print. Bold print means you were the best at something in a given year. Yadi doesn't have bold print. He doesn't. Another Cardinal that doesn't have a bunch of bold print, who I believe is a Hall of Famer, is Scott Rolen.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Rolen has an incredible level of consistency. Not bold print, but just consistency. And that's what Yadi has brought in over the years. And it's going to be very hard to quantify. And it's going to be very hard in Jeff Passan's aspect of looking at things of one of the handful of best players in a given year. If you don't see Yadi every night, you don't appreciate what he does. And I know that's a difficult narrative to spin. It's a difficult one, potentially, if you're making his case for the Hall of Fame. Say, hey, you had to be there. But it's true.
If you were putting together a Ken Burns documentary, if you had 10 different two-hour sections, are you necessarily going to have Vladimir Guerrero in there? Are you necessarily going to have Andre Dawson in there? Are you necessarily going to have even Frank Thomas in there? And that's a guy and that's a guy that won a couple of MVPs. I disagree fundamentally with that argument. I think there are, if you're going to tell the story of baseball, and I'm giving you 20 hours, I think there are a lot of guys that are in the Hall of Fame that you can tell that story without.
Well, I think that's true for sure. But the guys you're talking about, the ones you mentioned, I think you do probably include them if you have 20 hours of content, I think.
Big Hurt did have a video game, which was a lot of fun back in the day on Super Nintendo. Anybody else have that?
Big
Hurt Baseball.
So.
It's fantastic.
No, I didn't
Not
have
as good
you
as
know
King
what?
Griffey Jr. Baseball.
I didn't have a Super Nintendo. I was deprived.
You were a Sega kid.
I was a Sega kid. Had a Genesis.
Saw it the whole way.
Yeah, but I don't think you can tell that story. I mean, if you're going to include everybody you think is important, I don't think
Here's my point. If you're going to tell that story in 20 hours with Vladimir Guerrero, then there's no question that Yadier Molina's part of that discussion, too. I mean, the guy was a catcher for four World Series teams, he won two World Championships, multiple Gold Glover. A lot of people think he's the best defensive catcher of all time. So I think he's got to be in that discussion.
Well, one of the things I think should be considered for the Hall of Fame, and this was an idea brought up on the broadcast, which I've always agreed with in different ways, talking about guys like Minnie Minoso, if he should have been in, because there was some social significance about him getting in and the boundaries.
Five decades
he crossed,
or
right.
six?
That I think it was five. It was a lot of
Pretty
decades,
awesome.
Though. Yeah,
played but, in his 50s.
That's right. But it's a thing where if you're a big enough presence in the game, even if your numbers, even if your offensive numbers don't necessarily stand out, if you're a big enough presence in the game, I think that warrants consideration for the Hall just for that. Because it is the Hall of Fame,
mm-hmm. yeah.
is it not? I mean, it depends on
Ultimately,
how you want
yes.
to define it.
Right.
And
I'm with you there.
I think there are a number of different factors that he belongs in. I don't know if he gets in on the first crack, but I think if he doesn't get in, that would be really surprising for me.
Minnie Minoso played in 1949, then played in the 50s, 60s, played in 1976 with the White Sox at the age of 50, and then in 1980, and Bill Veeck, I believe, owned the team at the time, pinch hit a couple of times at the age of 54 so that he could play in five decades.
That guy knew how to... He knew how to draw attention.
It's pretty awesome.
Bill Veeck.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, we're going to play a game of over-under. We're going to give you some numbers, and we want you to participate with the Hot Shots text line, 65780. The over-under game is next on 101 ESPN. All right, Big Sizz is here, and we've got some over-under numbers that we're going to participate in during this segment, and we're going to pick either over or under, and then after it happens, Brad Barnes is going to keep all of the results.
We're going to document everything.
And we're going to document everything, and then we're going to have a scoreboard when it's all done. All right.
Do you think that the latter half of that is going to happen?
No chance.
Do you guys know what happened to our preseason predictions?
For what?
Are they still on the
MLB? I thought they were over here. We'll look.
Okay.
We did some remodeling.
Yeah, I think they're gone. I was wondering about
remodeling.
Not there. Well, we'll find them.
All right.
We can't get the final scoreboard until like January.
It's fine.
We're not going to keep track of this.
What, are we not going to be here?
The way things are going.
Big Sizz, what do you got for us?
So last year, in the offseason, the Cardinals spent $25 million on free agents. Over under $25.5 million this coming offseason.
$25.5 million?
Is that total net value of like one? Is that the entire
it was the total
Miller
of the,
contract?
It was Andrew Miller, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And does this include their own guys? Like, for example, would that include Ozuna?
That, they had re-signed players that were in a different category based on the numbers I found. So re-signed and extended players.
Okay.
I'm going to play the under category. Here, then.
Oh, yeah. If Ozuna's not part of this, I'll take the under. Yeah, because there's nobody else out there. Who else do you want in the free agent pool?
Anthony Rendon.
Yeah, but if he becomes a free agent, if the Nationals don't get... I'm with you, by the way, on Rendon. And Matt Carpenter's contract be damned. I would much rather have Rendon there.
I'd like to say Garrett Cole, but he's going to get $200 million and probably go to Anaheim.
He's going to go to the Yankees. Garrett Cole, gone. I'll take the under if Marcel's not a part of it.
Under for me, too.
Write that down, mate, and then save it in spot like you did our preseason prediction.
Just out of curiosity, is it a meetup that our page here says 78.5 million?
See, that's what I was thinking.
I told you earlier I looked at the wrong number. It was that might have been the re-signings.
The 7 is not close to the 2. Is that
I looked at the wrong number, Ronj.
So it is a meetup.
Yeah, it's the re-signed and extended number.
I follow
so it
you,
was
pal.
Close. All right. Number 2 here. The Browns, one of the hottest teams heading into the NFL season.
So damn hot.
So hot. Oddshark has them at 9 wins for their prediction this year. Over under 9.5 wins for the Cleveland Browns.
Ooh, good thing you put the half on
there. Yeah, I like that under because I'm going to go with 9.
I'm going 9 on the button too, Randy.
If it was 9, I was going to go push.
I am right there with you. I was running through their schedule. What do you have, Ronj?
I'm going to go over.
You're going to go
They're
over?
They're going to get right to 10.
All right, so I was running through their schedule. Titans week 1. I think they win that.
Yeah, I agree. Home.
At the Jets. I think they win that one as well. Rams is going to be an L for them.
Yep.
I've got at Ravens as an L.
2-2.
I've got 49ers being a W.
Yep.
Seattle, I got them losing. Even though they're hosting Seattle, I have them losing that game.
There. 3-3.
At New England's a loss. At Denver's a W. Buffalo is a W, I think, right?
Yep. That's fine. You're up to 5
next
wins.
To Buffalo? Versus the Steelers, I think they split with the Steelers.
Okay.
So I'm going to give them that one.
Get you to 6.
Dolphins is a W.
7.
Steelers loss.
Still at 7.
Bengals W.
8.
Cardinals W.
9.
Ravens loss.
Okay.
Bengals loss.
They're going to lose both Ravens?
Yeah, just because I already picked the under, but I had 10 wins here.
I think they're going to split with Baltimore. I like your schedule, except I think they split with Baltimore.
That's actually what I had written down, but I'm sticking to it.
A couple of scary ones for him. Number 1, a road primetime game in week 2 against the Jets. And that's a Monday night game.
Apparently, Darnold's the truth.
Yeah, that's what everybody's saying is that he looks even more people than Mike Greenberg are saying that.
Greeny does like him some.
He's
Jets
in the best
Darnold.
Shape of his life too.
Greeny, he looks good.
I'm sure he is. I'm talking about Darnold.
And I kind of like Denver. It's hard to go up to that altitude and play. And Denver's defense is going to. Vic Fangio is going to have a multiple defense that a young quarterback is going to have trouble dissecting.
They have oxygen tanks. They'll be fine.
Okay. Yeah, Von Miller doesn't even need an oxygen tank.
It's true. They're going to be entertaining, though, the Browns.
They'll be fun.
At the very least, even if like they don't play really well, every week you're going to be intrigued by Baker Mayfield and company.
Quick one from the Hotshot text line, 65780. Over under, 65% on how jaded Jeff Passan is.
I think I'm going to take the under.
I don't think he's jaded.
I think he has a tendency to get frustrated with Cardinal fans, but I don't think that approaches 65% of what he does. He's a First of all, he's a very good baseball insider. He's a smart baseball guy who does a spectacular Elmo impression.
It's really good. And if there are any national reporter that deals with local fans, there are probably several fan bases that get on his case about various stuff.
I think there's really only one.
You think it's just this one?
This I one's tough. Not. Everybody says this is the toughest one to deal with.
You know what? It's really funny because as far as a media market for players, this is probably one of the easier ones. Everybody, you know, everybody's excited, loves the Cardinals. But from a fan standpoint, man, people have they got their guys
they
back.
They protect their guys.
I love that. I love that about you. Nice work.
The Cardinals have 30 games left in the regular season. Over under 14.5 for how many games Matt Carpenter starts?
Ooh.
Under.
I think it's under also.
I'm going to bet the over.
Woo-hoo. Really?
And this is starts. I'm going to bet the over.
Who got hurt?
I just don't think that they have it in them to quit him. They can't quit him.
But I
think they do.
I agree with that. But I don't know about for the rest of this year on a starting level they feel that way. I bet they're thinking in the same way I'm thinking, and that is reset button in the offseason, see what happens next
year.
That would
be logical. I just kind of think he'll start more than half of the remaining games.
I'm saying he gets one out of every three, maybe.
That's kind of how I feel. Yep.
The division lead for the eventual NL Central champion, over under 1.5 games.
Under.
I'm going to go over.
Wait, what was that again?
Two.
The difference, the division lead for the NL Central champion, 1.5.
I'm going under, and I can't wait for the last series of the season already. Here against the Cubs. It's going to be epic.
Well, if you think the second to last game of the season is going to matter, you would have to take the under, and I think it will.
This one's been a hot topic recently. How many years it takes Yadi Molina to make the Hall of Fame? Over under 1.5.
This is after he's eligible.
After he's eligible.
I'm going to bet the under.
I'm taking the over.
I will take the over. I bet it's a one-year wait for him. At most, it's a two-year wait.
Jeff Passan, while we don't all fall in line with everything he says, Jeff Passan makes points that are going to be made in the room. And
right.
We've talked about like the bold print on your baseball reference. What does he lead the league in? I think that Yadi might end up being one for national baseball fans. Everybody around baseball knows Yadi, knows the lore and how great he is. But it might take some talking into, depending on who's on the ballot with him, by the way, of getting him in first ballot.
So the way I see it is this conversation basically starts now because we're having it now. Nationally, I believe the conversation's about to get rolling. When it's his final season, whether that's next year or the year after that, so I'm assuming he's going to play probably another couple of years, that conversation is going to happen that whole time. And I do believe people who are against it are going to soften on it as that time goes on. So I think by the time we're 5 years from his retirement, people are going to vote him in. It may just take a year or two at most.
And this one, the most important one right here. Touchdown passes thrown by the greatest, future greatest of all time, Patrick Mahomes. Over under 44.5.
You mispronounced Mitch Trubisky.
Oh, stop it. Has he thrown a touchdown pass yet? Has that happened?
I think you guys meant Derek Carr.
44.5.
Derek Carr.
Better watch out for Peterman.
Okay, what's he going to do?
Because
I hope Nate Peterman just has a great year.
I'm going to look at that division with the defense that the Chargers play and Fangio getting to Denver, and I'm going to bet the under, but not by much. I still think he goes above 40, but I think it's like 41, 42.
I think he has a monster year also, but I'm taking the under.
I'm going to take the under. I bet he gets to 40, but he's not getting to 50 again, and 44 seems too high. Let's go under.
That was cool.
Real quick, not sure where this text came from, but pickles are the worst food on the planet. We didn't ask for bad takes, did we?
How dare you?
I know a lot of people that hate pickles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
My wife hates pickles. You want
really?
Me? Oh, Chick-fil-A. You want me pickles? Yeah. Pickles make the sandwich at Chick-fil-A. And
they're really good.
Disagree.
I think pickles are really good, too. Now, here is a better take than that.
Okay.
Liver is the worst food in the world.
You know what? I don't think that I can tell you for sure because I've never had it. Don't plan to.
Nope. It's the worst.
It's got a real iron taste to it.
Kind of powdery.
It's definitely like granular or something.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Nah, I don't like it. The texture is gross. Tastes like...
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Next in the fast lane, David Glass is expected to net $1 billion when his sale of the Royals is finalized. With all this money flying around Major League Baseball, why aren't owners spending it in the offseason? That's next on 101 ESPN. Well, David Glass is the owner of the Royals, and he is in the midst of selling the franchise, and he's expected to net $1 billion from the sale of the club that he bought in the year 2000. When you consider the money that owners are making and the franchise value that they are accruing, and you look at what has happened in free agency, does it get frustrating that baseball salaries have actually gone down over the course of the last couple of years?
Yeah, that aspect of it is frustrating to me, though. I'm not frustrated by the amount of money that owners make. I'm more frustrated by the rules in the system that's put in place that's not paying the younger players currently. The one that incentivizes you to get to free agency, and then all of a sudden you're a free agent and you're too old. To me, that's the problem. But overall, you need your players to be making money. If ownership, if franchises are going to go up year in and year out, well, then player salaries, I mean, that you should see an adjustment there as well.
And there's only one entity that can help young players, and that includes minor league players, and that entity is the Major League Baseball Players Association. It's a crime to pay more than a dime.
That's true.
It's also a crime that minor league players are still being paid less than minimum wage. And if major league players, who often talk about the amounts that minor league players are being paid, it'd be nice if they would do something in their negotiations with the Major League Baseball owners at some point.
I agree with you. And all you would think that all of them, having gone through it, would feel the exact same way. But I get the sense, and I could be totally wrong about this, but I get the sense major leaguers are so concerned about what's going to happen to them in the next few years moving forward that what's happening to the minor leaguers isn't necessarily on their radar. That doesn't mean that the Players Association shouldn't be able to handle both here, or that they shouldn't be able to say, look, we want to improve our lot in this whole thing, but we also understand that by improving the lot of the minor leaguers, that's going to help everybody, too. I would hope they feel like they have the capacity to handle it all at once.
Now, let's move to the young major leaguers, because that's the real crux of the matter. Analytics play a lot into this, because owners don't want to pay anybody who's 30 or older. So what's the mechanism to get younger players more money?
You got to have... Well, even though the big league minimum right now is big, I mean, it's $550,000, mm-hmm. I think it
somewhere
is.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Which is crazy. I mean, just from when I started, jumped up a couple of hundred grand in the last couple of years. I mean, so you're seeing it escalate a little bit there. But I feel like your base can be higher. I mean, you make it to the big leagues, I think that base could be higher off the bat. But ultimately, the big one is hitting free agency earlier. I mean, if you're not going to pay a guy because he is 28, 29 years old and you don't want to pay him 33, 34, then you're going to have to give them the bite at the apple, or whatever you want to call it, a little bit earlier.
I also like the idea of minor league free agency going from 6 years to 4 or 3 years.
I totally agree with you. If you allow the major leaguers to get to that point quicker, this conversation isn't necessarily as dire as it is right now, because here's what's happening. Obviously, teams have figured out that they can get similar production from a younger, cheaper player that they would get from somebody who's 32, 33, or older and established. So teams throughout history have been trying to figure out ways to save money, and that's one of the ways they've figured it out. But they've also got the best of both worlds, because they don't have to pay these guys until they turn 29 or 30 years old. And then by that point, they're kind of screwed because they're too old. So if you were to just bump that up, let them reach free agency after 3 or at most 4 years, I think this takes care of a lot of that. And I think in addition to it, in an ideal world, you bump up the minimum salary too.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that. Now, playing the other side of it, what are you going to give up then?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't get that without giving something. And it totally makes sense to also take care of the minor league guys. But if you come to the table and say, all right, we want free agency to be a year earlier, we also want the minimum salaries to be raised, and by the way, you know, those minor league guys that are making sweatshop money, we'd like them to actually get mm-hmm. paid too. Which one of those three do you think is going to fall off the table first from the
minor
minor league guys, for sure the minor league guys, because you're taking care of your guys, the guys that are paying the dues first, I guess. I wish, to your guys' point before, I wish there was something that could be done where everybody takes care of the minor league side, or maybe just organizations say, and I have a whole lot of respect for the Blue Jays that doubled their minor leaguer salaries, and it's just like, here you go. You know, we're giving you a little bit so you don't have to worry, like, where dinner's coming from. For a lot of guys, that's the case. But there are just so many things that the players screwed up.
Yes,
and,
they did.
And found themselves in a hole. It might take a couple of CBAs to actually get to where you need to get to.
I'm with you, and the only real concession players can make at this point, because they've already conceded a lot, is the salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they want to do it. So, and I don't know that they should do it, quite frankly, but...
They need a salary floor.
Yeah. But again, they're going to get the floor without the cap.
They have a cap, okay? Teams are not going over the luxury.
It's a soft cap.
Right.
There are only a couple of teams that can handle going over the luxury tax.
Yeah, and the owners don't want anything to do with the floor. I still, all due respect to the Royals, I don't see how that franchise is worth that amount of money. $1.2 billion or whatever he's going to get for it. I know he's got the TV contract, but... All the metrics seem to be going backwards for baseball in terms of fans, in terms of national TV interest, although the national TV money is there. But over the course of Sherman's ownership, is that franchise, he obviously thinks that franchise value is going to increase even more.
Yes, well, he does.
I think that begs a whole different topic and a different question. If you're seeing stuff like that, and maybe you are somebody that is in the market, maybe you're an owner already, and you're looking around and saying, man, where is our edge? Where are we going to get better? How are we going to continue to grow? And you have all your people working on it, and you're talking to other owners, and you all come back to the table, and it's like, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. Would you be more inclined to think about selling your franchise before you really wanted to sell your franchise? Mm-hmm. If you saw right now that your franchise could sell for $2 billion, you put peanuts into it relatively, would you think, I don't think it can get much better than this? Because at the end of it, it is a business.
Yeah, it depends on how old I am.
Yep.
How much time
I
have
left to you.
And how much it means to me, and whether or not my family wants to take over after I'm gone. I think it's really what it comes down to. But I think one lesson from the John Sherman thing is, for somebody who is a minority owner in a team that has no attendance, Cleveland struggles, even when they're good, to get people in that ballpark. So he's seen it. He's seen behind the curtain. And he said, you know what? I want to go from this to another organization that is similar in the sense they have a difficult time getting people in the ballpark, also because they're bad. He knows he can make money. So I think the lesson here is, when baseball teams try to tell you they are poor, I have a hard time believing it, because this guy is not moving from one club to another if he doesn't think he can make money.
I did want to ask you guys, so this list, and Meat sent us an article with all the numbers from Forbes, and it has, you know, revenue of ball clubs, and I mean, there's some monster revenues. Certainly the Yankees, $668 million is their revenue. But the next column is operating income. So that's after everything is said and done. That's after you pay your salaries. It's after everything. That number is a lot lower than I think most people would expect as far as money going in the owner's pockets. Now, the Dodgers are making a lot of money. Dodgers are by far number one. $95 million is their operating income. Like, that's pretty good. But I was surprised that some of these teams were as low as they were. I figured the Yankees would end up being through the roof, right, with their, you know, how much money they make, their net revenue. They're actually $29 million. That's, like...
And there could be some things missing here.
Certainly can be, certainly. But yeah. But you also have like three teams operating at what they say is a loss. I thought that was almost impossible to do.
Me too.
You got the Marlins, the Blue Jays, and the Orioles, as far as operation costs, say they're operating at a loss. And the Royals are right behind them with $5.3 million as far as their operating income goes. Not everybody is totally rich.
By the way, where are the Cardinals on that list of operating
income?
They
are...
They got 65?
Yeah, $65 million puts... near the middle of the pack.
All right. So there you go. It's the Fast Lane.
Tenth. All right, top
good for them. We need your fantasy football questions. If you haven't drafted yet, Kyle Elfrink is going to give you some tips. If you're scrambling for answers after drafting a quarterback who retired, either send us a text, 65780, or leave us a mic drop with the 101 ESPN app, and Kyle will answer your fantasy questions next on 101 ESPN. Last year, I had the second pick in the 101 ESPN fantasy draft, and I took Le'Veon Bell. We did the drawing today, and I have the second pick again this year. Kyle Elfrink of SiriusXM.
Zeke Elliott.
We'll see.
Melvin Gordon.
We're going to find out. Kyle's with us on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line on 101 ESPN. How are you, sir, and who am I taking?
I am doing great. I'm chuckling already hearing that lament of last season. Hey, if it helps you, it cannot get any worse this year. Can it? It can.
Le'Veon told me to take him.
What's that?
Le'Veon told me to take him again.
Yeah, he was about, 11 months late with his apology and his news on that. We all could have used that news last August. Don't take Lev. He might be going maybe round 10 or 11 in your draft. Assuming it's a PPR and assuming Saquon Barkley goes first, You're looking at McCaffrey or Kamara. And that's a real difficult spot to be in. I prefer Kamara just a bit over McCaffrey. I still think they're going to have to scale back on all of the work McCaffrey did last season. So I think the big asset he brings is the, pass receptions over 100. That could scale back to a still impressive 85. And I think Kamara is just part of a better offense with more scorability, if you will. And also, I still worry about Cam Newton and the shoulder issue and now the foot issue. I'm just not sold on him making it 16 games. That could absolutely affect McCaffrey's effectiveness.
Kyle, I feel like we have the responsibility every year to go over some of the same stuff because inevitably there's somebody listening right now that hasn't played fantasy football or maybe played a year but really didn't know what they're doing. Do you have any firm rules of engagement? Firm, like when you go into a draft, I'm for sure doing this, I'm not doing that. Do you have anything like that?
For the fifth straight year, don't draft Josh Gordon.
Okay.
Please. Five straight years of this.
Every
single year we get the Josh Gordon hype. And what's amazing about it is people resort to the idea, oh, but man, when Josh Gordon is on the field, just look what he does. Okay, look at last year. What did he do? There's not much there that should get you excited. Even if you prorate his effort last year with the Patriots, the 16 games, you're not getting anything beyond a wide receiver three. And of course, you have all the off-the-field issues and getting them through a season is damn near impossible. So that's a golden rule. Some other rules of engagement, I'm not going to select the quarterback early. The position is just incredibly deep. It's deeper than ever here in 2019. And, speaking of the Patriots, Tom Brady's going off as like the 19th or 20th quarterback right now.
Wow.
I mean, if you can get a guy who has a very solid chance of 25 touchdowns and 4,000 yards as the 20th guy at his position, it just speaks to the depth there. You don't need a Mahomes. You don't have to have Aaron Rodgers. You can totally get by with Matt Ryan. You can get by with Phillip Rivers. There are some very good QB2s out there. So I think that's something to keep in mind. And then finally, understand that there is going to be risk involved. You're going to take rookies or you're going to take somebody like Kareem Hunt who you have got to wait on for 9 weeks. You just don't want so many of those guys. I don't mind taking one of them, but if you're a team that you come out of the draft and you have four rookies, that's a bad build. Or if you come out of a draft and you've got, a wide receiver, a tight end, and a QB all from the same team, that's a bad build. So you need to understand, yeah, sure, there's going to be risk and you're going to have to stretch and sometimes you're going to be stuck into a corner, but you don't want to do that over and over and over again. You don't want to go into a draft and you come out of it and you got Zeke Elliott in the first round and you selected Melvin Gordon in the sixth round. I understand it's great value, but you have two guys who could miss months of the season, and it's just not a good build to begin the year.
So that's a lot of stuff to not do. Is there something you absolutely have to do?
Running backs and receivers. Just keep piling them up. Understand your scoring system. That sounds very rudimentary, but a lot of people go into drafts, especially if they're in multiple leagues, and they don't understand that the value of a player totally changes depending on your league and how it's set up. And we're starting to see leagues now where tight ends get more credit for receptions than running backs and wide receivers do. So you need to know these things. You've got the 6 points for passing touchdown versus 4 points for passing touchdown. So understand your rules and read up on that. I think one final issue to kind of throw out there is check the depth charts for all the NFL teams. And there's a variety of places on the web that provide these. And most of them nowadays will stick that little red cross next to a name.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you know who's injured and who's dealing with something through camp so that you're not stuck with multiple players on that side. So,
you know, so many people show up with a draft guide, but it's 2 months old, and there's no issue or no information about injuries. Get the latest on those things. It'll take you 20 minutes, but I think it's well worth it when you start drafting.
All right, Kyle, here are a couple of texts from the 618. Can keep two from among Mahomes, Bell, or Saquon?
I think it's a Bell and Saquon. And people are going to say, well, Mahomes scored the most point in my fantasy league. He did that in every league, folks. And if you look at Pat Mahomes, it was a historic season, an insanely great season. The guy was stellar, and he was an absolute home run, total home run. If you look at the history of the NFL, when you have great offenses, how many of them can do it back-to-back seasons? We know in St. Louis, even the Rams fell off just a bit in that second season. A couple of years ago, Denver Broncos, I guess it was about 5 years ago, they had that incredibly historic season, total fall off the next year. We always think these offenses are unstoppable and the defenses won't catch up. Kansas City just naturally will fall back. That's going to affect Mahomes. He will still be good. But again, I don't need Pat Mahomes to win. Getting guys like Barkley and Bell, those are two of the top 10 running backs. That is an awesome way to start your team.
Multiple texts asking what you think of Miles Sanders.
I like Miles Sanders, but I hate the landing spot. And I think you're hearing that in a lot of places. Philadelphia and Doug Peterson in particular, they're just not a place that sticks with one guy and lets them roll. Remember, they traded for Jay Ajayi a couple of years ago. They didn't even make use of him. They kept finding reasons to use Darren Sproles. Wendell Smallwood would get out there. And, you know, Sproles is still hanging around. And they bring in Jordan Howard. They just don't commit to a single guy. If I get Sanders, it's probably as an RB4, which for the time being makes him a bench pick. And then you got to kind of wait and see and hope maybe an injury occurs or Sanders just takes off with the job. But I don't want him as one of my first three running backs.
Where do you take Antonio Brown?
Not a Brown guy. I'm worried about the move to Oakland beyond all the silliness off the field. I think Derek Carr is a big step down from what he had with Ben Roethlisberger. I think Antonio Brown, you're going to see him go just inside the top 20. He may get as high as 15th in some PPR leagues. I really wouldn't be getting fired up about Antonio Brown in, say, 25, 30, that kind of range. And he will be gone in most every league by that point.
Kyle, we were having more of a football conversation yesterday as opposed to the fantasy aspect of it. But James Conner popped up when we were talking about the Steelers. Can James Conner do it again?
I think he can. And you know, we were talking about Philadelphia's offense. Pittsburgh's offense is kind of the flip side of that. Whoever is the running back seems to excel. Now, we all know Lev Bell, but remember when D'Angelo Williams took over for a few games when Lev Bell had injuries, and D. Will did almost the same things as Lev Bell. And if you look at James Conner last season, I'm not going to say it was quite to the level of Lev Bell, but they committed to him, they used him, they did well with him. I think he is a very solid top 10 running back. In fact, I would take him ahead of Le'Veon Bell, who's now with the Jets. I'd take him ahead of Bell, maybe one or two slots in that first round or early second round.
How risky is it to take Todd Gurley before, like, the third round?
I don't know. I think he's going to go in the second. I think those numbers are still going to sell him. It's kind of fascinating with Gurley. We've known about this issue now for 5 months with the knees. And we've got all these other issues cropping up with guys like Melvin Gordon and Zeke Elliott, and they've almost overcome the worries we had about Gurley. That Gurley stuff is old news. Now, I think Gurley, on a per-touch basis, will be pretty darn good, but they're going to scale him back probably 5 to 6 touches. There may be weeks where they just have to use him, but they are going to make use of the other guys. I think the key with Gurley, you know, if you draft him, you have to. It's mandatory that you get either Malcolm Brown or Darrell Henderson. And everybody's going Henderson, the rookie out of Memphis, as the quote-unquote handcuff or the guy who sees the work if Gurley's going to sit down. It's not that cut and dried, especially early on. We actually could see more of Malcolm Brown. A lot of reports there with the Rams say that because of his familiarity with this offense, he's now been there for 3 years or so, and just kind of knowing the lay of the land versus a rookie who can't pass protect right now. That's a knock on Henderson, that we may actually see more of Brown. So one or the other. I think Henderson has more long-term value, but if you draft Henderson and we don't see immediate pluses in the month of September, don't be too concerned. That could be a back play in November and December.
Kyle, there's some other running backs that you definitely look at and say, I'll get this guy and I'm happy about it, but I need his handcuff as well.
You know, me and my co-host Ray Flowers have gone back and forth on this handcuff thing, and and he is living and dying with it. I think it's always a great plan, but I think when you're in a 12-team league, everybody knows the story with these running backs, and they know there are so many quote-unquote handcuffs that you need to add. You know, the obvious one is with the L.A. Chargers. Another obvious one is with the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, both those situations I think people know very well. I think in Green Bay, the Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams one is perhaps one you might want to take a look at. I like Jones a lot more than Williams. But if Jones gets off to a slow start, I could see the Packers making use of Williams there. I will throw out, and I don't want to call this a handcuff, but a guy that I – well, actually two guys I'll throw out as rookies because – I constantly think I get this rep as hating every rookie who ever shows up. But two guys I do like relatively late, Devin Singletary out of Buffalo. That crew of running backs they have in Buffalo is a bunch of chopped liver. It's mincemeat, and Devin Singletary, the rookie, can move to the head of the class there. And then also Justice Hill in Baltimore. Hill shows a lot of Alvin Kamara-like tendencies. Hopefully Baltimore can make use of that. But I think Justice Hill is a guy that I want to take a shot on late in draft.
Kyle, as always, great stuff. And if people didn't get enough, they can hear you tonight on Sirius XM, right?
And, well, usually tonight, we've actually got, believe it or not, guys, an Alice in Chains fantasy football draft. A bunch of rock stars out in Los Angeles are hosting a draft. And believe it or not, on top of that, that means I got kicked off this evening. I took a boot for a bunch of rock stars, but most nights, you're totally right, 7 o'clock, and then we'll be starting up the Sunday night show at 8 o'clock every Sunday throughout the season.
And we will hear from you every week. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Take it easy, guys. See ya.
Kyle Elfrink, you can hear him most nights on Sirius XM, Channel 87 and Channel 210. Next up.
Got to be some bad decisions happening in a rock star draft, don't there?
Oh, you'd think so. Yeah, just in rock star lives in
general. I got a good feel about Andrew Luck. Okay.
Next up, we've got a new fighter in the 4 o'clock fight on 101 ESPN.